We are going to energize the country.
We need to wake up and smell the coffee.
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Another future's possible, but we've got to fight for it.
Order!
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. And in this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Amar Ahmed, who is a policy officer and is also responsible for the excellent Vote Switzerland Twitter account. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, and thanks for the wonderful praise that you have for my 2 weeks-old account.
Well, it's a very interesting account. And the first question that I'd like to ask you is, what made you become interested in Switzerland and Swiss politics?
Well, I guess it started with my education itself. So I graduated last year from the University of Manchester, and I obtained a master's in political science, governance and public policy. So the key kind of focus of the degree was public institutions, you know, how they are developed, what their history says about them and how it guides them to operate. And when you look at the political institutions of any country, they are very much informed by their past. They're quite reactionary to their history. Yeah. It says a lot about where they've come from. So, personally, I'm quite interested in European politics as well as British politics from where I'm based. And I guess my first kind of interaction with Switzerland was that I noticed that there's a massive gaping hole in the middle of the European Union. There's this small nation that is geographically right at the center of Europe or outside of the European Union. And so I had a few questions. I thought, let me have a look at the key institutions. And what I found was that Switzerland had a very unique system, and it wasn't something that was quite well known. There's not much about Switzerland, I think. I think there's quite a lot of people who are interested in politics and political systems outside of their domestic politics and outside of perhaps the United States, for the reason being that it's the current world power. Mm. Not many people know about the tiny mountainous state of Switzerland. So one day I thought, Switzerland is really interesting. There's not much information about Switzerland. Why not create an account dedicated to covering Swiss politics and perhaps educate some people who are interested in general global politics?
And as you say, Switzerland is very much an interesting nation within the concept of Europe and the European Union. And I'd like to explore the form that the Swiss government takes, because it's quite an interesting mixture. You have a national council, a council of states, and a federal council. Could you explain to the listeners what those different parts of the Swiss state do and how they differ?
Okay, so I guess one key theme when it comes to these institutions is the concept of power sharing. Within Switzerland, the way their institutions are built up is to share power. So firstly, it is a highly federalized state. Even though Switzerland is referred as the Confederation of Switzerland, it actually is a federation. So it shares power at the legislative level from the federal to the cantonal, which is the Swiss version of a state, such as New York or Texas. So at the federal level, you have the legislature, which is the Federal Assembly. So the Federal Assembly is split into two chambers. You have the Council of State, which operates similar to the US Senate, in which the 26 cantons each have a two representative, except for the six half cantons, which are the smaller cantons, who have a single representative. And then you have the lower chamber, which is called the National Council. The National Council has 200 members, and its seats are distributed amongst the cantons by population density. So, for example, a canton such as Zurich would have 35 seats, and a canton such as St. Gallen. And I'm sorry to any listeners from St. Gallen who would probably be quite annoyed that I might have pronounced their canton wrong, but they would have 12 seats. So that's the basic layout of the two houses. And now the two houses have quite a number of unique characteristics. So they're elected on 4-year terms. So the previous election, a federal election that took place in Switzerland, took place in 2019, and the next one is scheduled to take part in 2023. Now, first thing to know about the MPs themselves are generally over history, but less as we get to 2019 and 2020, is that the MPs work on a part-time basis. So there are four legislative kind of sessions throughout a year. So you'll have the spring session, the summer session, the autumn, and then the winter. So currently, the MPs are sitting the winter sessions and debating the current laws and et cetera. And usually MPs will also have other jobs to which they will get to when the sessions are not on within the Federal Assembly. That's less the case as time went on, as the role of a politician became more professionalized in Switzerland. But the second kind of key aspect of the Federal Assembly, the two chambers and the duty that they perform, is that they confirm the executive. Now, like their German counterpart, the Federal Assembly, also known as the Bundesversammlung, and again, if I butchered it, I completely apologize to German speakers, is that they choose the president or the head of state. However, when it comes to Switzerland, they do not elect one person, they elect seven different people. They share the role of head of state, and they sit on what is known as the Federal Council. Separate to the National Council, the Federal Council, so each of the seven members have a specific portfolio. So you will have one that has a competency within finance, another one in foreign affairs. So similar to a usual cabinet government. The difference when it comes to the Federal Council is that they practice a specific Latin phrase, which I will not butcher, in which each member has an equal rank and status to one another. There is no form of hierarchy within that seven member executive body. And each works in a way in which they work to find consensus. And once a decision has been made, they speak in one voice. Now, there is the title of President of the Swiss Confederation. However, that's mainly a ceremonial title. It has one-year terms, and the Federal Assembly chooses one of the seven members from the Federal Council to hold the title for that year. And then after the one-year term is up, that title gets passed on to the nominated vice president, who's also one of the seven members of the council. Now, because it's one-year terms, you can imagine that there are probably members of the Federal Council who have served the title of the Swiss Federal Presidency twice. So, for example, one of the longest current reigning members of the Federal Council is an SVP, which is the Swiss People's Party politician, Mr. Murer, who has served twice as Swiss president. And the Swiss president represents Switzerland on the international stage when it requires, and also chairs the meetings of the Federal Council. So the Federal Council is very much the executive body, and it exists as an executive body in which power is distributed amongst seven different candidates. Now, I think one very interesting aspect of the way that the governing system in Switzerland works is that the parties of Switzerland, there is the Swiss People's Party, which is a national conservative populist agrarian party. They are the current largest political party when it comes to representation in the federal level. There is the SP, the Social Democratic Party, who are the centralist party. You also have the Christian Democrats. You have the Liberals as well. And they generally are the four biggest parties in Switzerland. You also have some smaller parties. So you have the Greens, and you also have the GLP, which is the Green Liberals. So they're a party that focuses on green issues mixed with a liberal economic outlook. Now, so the way that the Swiss system has operated for decades is that it exists within a grand coalition. So the four main parties, the Social Democrats, the Christian Democrats, the Liberals, and the Swiss People's Parties, representing voters from the center-left all the way to the right wing of the political spectrum, exist in a kind of permanent coalition. So the way that this operates is that each So the seven seats are distributed amongst all four parties. So the three largest parties in terms of popular support take two seats on the federal council, and the fourth largest takes the seventh seat. And it's parts of it is kind of defined within the constitution, and other parts of it is kind of a formal agreement. So what happens is the legislator, the federal assembly, comes together and they basically nominate or they vote on a candidate to take one of the seven seats. Usually, because of the way it operates within Switzerland, most members of the federal council runs for more than one term. And this term corresponds at the same with the legislative term of the Federal Assembly. The four parties will nominate one or two candidates depending on their party strength. And usually all the MPs and the politicians from the four main parties will agree to that individual taking one of the seven seats. So as I stated earlier, one of the themes is this sharing of power. What we find is that there's a sharing of power on the executive level between four parties with very different political outlooks, I must say. And I think that's one of the very unique things about Switzerland, is that it's shared power like this amongst such different political actors for decades.
Now, one of the other things that is particularly unusual and interesting for someone who isn't Swiss about Swiss politics is the amount of referendums that they have. It's much more usual in Switzerland to have referendums than, say, for example, in the UK. Now, why does Switzerland have so many referendums, and how effective do you think the referendums in Switzerland are at resolving issues?
I think if you do look and explore at the Swiss institutions, a lot of the Swiss outlook is that it shares responsibility. So that's me just repeating that previous point, but it shares responsibility in the sense that, you know, you have legislative power shared from the federal to the municipal level.
Yeah.
And that is also shared to the population. This also comes from the fact that the member states were all quite highly have a very proud and long history of independence and power located at the local level. So this in this very federalized state, it ensures that there is not a top heavy relationship between the citizens and the politicians that sit right at the top. Now, I think a key misconception when it comes to Switzerland is people refer to it as a direct democracy. That's not the case, considering the fact that, as we've explored, they elect members of parliament to represent them on the Federal Assembly. But the Swiss constitution allows Swiss citizens and Swiss voters to have a great say on the way that legislation works and initiatives that are enacted on the three different levels. So if a Swiss citizen or is a group of citizens want to challenge a specific legislation that has been passed by, let's say, the Federal Assembly, there are requirements to which they will need to get a certain amount of signatures by a certain amount of time. Once those preconditions are met, then irregardless to whether the legislator itself does not want to hold a referendum on that specific topic area or legislation, etc., within the constitution, they are mandated to hold those a referendum on that issue. So they could either vote down a specific law or suggest a new initiative for the federal, municipal, or cantonal governments to take hold. So the way that the referendum system works is that, similar to how the legislative periods are split up within the year, there are four specific key dates throughout the year that are booked specifically for potential referendums. So, for example, the Sunday that has just gone by, Sunday the 29th of November, Switzerland held their final referendum day, if you want to refer to it as that. And there were two key issues in which there were popular initiatives started that gathered enough momentum, enough votes to warrant holding a referendum. One was on adhering to human rights and environmental principles, and the other was relating to investing in kind of the war weaponry industry. And so the way the referendum system works is that there needs to be a double majority. So the double majority is that the popular vote, they need to obtain 50% or more. And at the same time, they must obtain a yes vote from the majority of the cantons. So the 20 full cantons count as one vote and the 6 half cantons count as 3 votes. So essentially, you would need 12 cantonal kind of approvals for the law to pass. The first referendum on the environment and human rights passed the popular margin but failed to obtain the cantonal approval, whilst the second one failed at both. So it is a very interesting system, and I think some listeners can allude certain similarities to the way that the US electoral system works in the sense of the electoral college and the popular vote. On your point or your question about whether this is a success, from the perspective of someone that lives outside of Switzerland and is not engrossed in the life as an average Swiss voter would usually be, I guess my answer wouldn't be as true to form. Someone who would lived and experienced it. I guess the one issue, and I guess that comes with this system, is that, for example, both initiatives that were proposed by popular initiatives, so these were citizenship campaigns that were supported by businesses and specific industries and specific politicians, both the Federal Assembly and the Federal Council, the legislature and the executive, disagreed with the initiatives and actually recommended a no vote. So what you can have is an odd situation in which the population may approve a specific law or initiative, but the legislature and the executive who are tasked with carrying this specific demand out may be dead set against it. So you have that kind of clash in between, that perception, and that's quite odd. And I guess the second element to your question also is that when it comes to success, I think a key issue in Swiss politics is that there's relatively low turnout. So turnout usually is, I think, in its height around 50%, but can easily go down to about 30% itself. And there can often be a kind of legislative or election overload, if you might say, because you have municipal elections, you have cantonal elections for the legislature and the executive, and you have federal elections, and then on the same level you will also have federal referendums, you will have cantonal referendums, and then also at a municipal level. So there are multiple things in which a Swiss citizen is voting on throughout the year, and this is not a very specific period, this is spread throughout the year. And another element is that whilst there is information posted on government websites regarding each initiative, if you're voting on 6 initiatives at the cantonal level and 3 initiatives at the federal level, you might, the average Swiss citizen might not want to sit down and partake a couple of hours trying to come up to speed in who's saying what and what the pro and against arguments are. So I guess it's interesting because the whole concept of referendum is an engagement activity in some sense with the population, but it seems that within Switzerland there is an engagement problem when it comes to the referendums and the citizens, especially if you look at low turnout and low enthusiasm.
Now, one particular issue that we mentioned earlier in the podcast, and one issue that has been put to a referendum, is membership of the European Union. And of course, Switzerland isn't a member of the European Union. How much do you think the European Union influences and impacts on Swiss politics?
As of right now, the idea of the European Union and joining or, you know, remaining outside of it isn't a very highly politicized topic in itself. There are parties who support the current bilateral agreements, such as the Green Party and the Social Democratic Party, whilst there are whilst the Swiss People's Party, the right-wing party, favors a more distant approach. And it was SVP politicians who started the ball rolling on the referendum that was held earlier in the year regarding their current constitutional relationship with the European Union. The way that the Swiss system works and the way that it's broken up within cantons and municipalities, I don't think the EU is a big contentious issue. Whilst there might be certain points around migration, certain points of contention, etc. I think generally their current relationship isn't something that generates a lot of the political kind of communications, especially currently due to the current COVID situation within Switzerland. But I think so far this Swiss citizens, most political parties and the legislators are quite happy with the current relationship that exists between the European Union and the Confederation of Switzerland.
One issue that I thought was quite interesting in relation to Swiss politics is the current president of the Swiss Confederation is a woman, but previously Switzerland has an interesting relationship with female suffrage, with women only being able to vote in federal elections in 1971, though of course they were able to vote in some canton elections in the 1950s, and one particular canton, I think, only passed in the 1990s. Why do you think that Switzerland took quite a bit in comparison with some other European countries to pass female suffrage? And what impact do you think that that has had, not just on Swiss history, but on Swiss politics?
I guess, firstly, the lack of representation of women for such a long period, especially in voting, most definitely would have quite a big impact on the way that laws and choices are made on the three different levels. I think one aspect in which it took Switzerland so long, and it is very surprising because it seems quite an outlier in that sense when it comes to female suffrage in Europe, is that a key kind of approach to politics, especially on the federal level, is to not get too involved. There is always this this phobia of being too highly centralized or too unitary in their governance, in their approach to governance, which is why you saw strides up more on a cantonal level before it became something that materialized on the federal level. I think the impacts, obviously, long-term can be depicted in many different ways, but one, personally, Switzerland is quite a conservative nation in the sense, the way in which it votes. The parties based on the right side of the political spectrum usually tend to do much better at both a cantonal and a federal level. The current, the largest party is the SVP, who now hold both the presidency of both chambers and will be taking over the presidency of the Swiss Confederation from the current president. There's a kind of a rich history between religion and the state, in a sense that you have three parties that reference, the religious element is quite strongly reflected within the Christian Democrats, the Conservative Democrats, and the Evangelical People's Party. So the impact of the system and currently on and how long it took for Swiss female voters to get the vote could really only be communicated by someone who has lived through that period and currently can see the impacts of it. But what we can gather from Switzerland is it's a very conservative style country. It very much doesn't like to meddle within its governance structures and likes to leave a lot of competencies to the state level. And I guess one thing that really did push female suffrage was the fact that they were quite late to the game. And by that point, there would have been quite great pressure to push forward the suffrage. And also the referendum system as well. So as I mentioned, you need a double majority. So the kind of cantonal system in there that's reflected in the Council of States and also the in a referendum in which you need a majority of cantons will usually almost always favour the conservative side of Switzerland. And so more progressive, more or left-leaning politics usually would struggle in a system that favours more conservative outlook to political and social life.
And you mentioned conservative outlook there, and one of the interesting things I think about Switzerland is the focus it was given by Steve Bannon. He went to Switzerland in 2018 and spoke before an event of conservative activists, and he expressed the belief that he thought that Switzerland, you know, could be a place that could start a kind of like a Trumpian movement in Europe. I mean, how applicable do you think that is? Do you think that Switzerland, in its political nature, is quite a populist leaning state, or do you think that because of the system, it sort of ensures that populism doesn't get too out of hand, perhaps?
It's a very interesting dichotomy, especially between the principle of sharing of power and populism in itself. Mm. There are many touch points and aspects of the way the Swiss system works that easily could promote populist politics. And there are a number of populist politicians that are currently very prominent within the Swiss political life. But the consensus building and the sharing of power usually stems a lot of the populist kind of knee jerks of, you know, people coming from a more populist political persuasion. I would completely disagree with Steve Bannon's assessment that Switzerland would be a great place in which a populist movement can start that would light the fires of populism across Europe, specifically because I think, again, Switzerland exists within a very weird paradigm where it's at the center of Europe, but it also exists outside of the EU. And it speaks to a lot about, I guess the best kind of phrase for it is that Switzerland likes to mind its own business. It's a very inward focus in the sense that it has that quite arm length relationship with the EU. Mm. And that's often how it kind of operates when it comes to European style politics. And the other element is one of the key reasons why individuals like Bannon would speak about the potential of populism in Switzerland is because of the SVP and the success that they have electorally in Switzerland. They have the most representatives on a cantonal level as well, as well as on a federal level. But what he fails to understand is that within that system, especially within the way that the federal council works, is that the conservative populists share power with the left-wing social democrats, with the Christian democrats, etc. So most people would always say that any political party coming into power usually moderates. There's always a small drift towards the center as the realization and responsibilities of power comes into fruition. And that's very much the case in Switzerland. And that's the way that the Swiss system operates, is that it tries to seek consensus and the majority of the people. And I think, you know, they are very an independent minded nation in its outlook. So I think personally, that assessment is wrong. I guess, you know, the best, most surefire way to spread populism across Europe is by a member state that has a prominent populist party and exists within the European Union. That would be a better tool to spread populism. But because of the Swiss interesting relationship with the EU and the way that it works as a country, I would disagree with those remarks.
We're coming towards the end of the podcast, Amar. It's been fantastic to have you on. And I've got one final question. Now, obviously, because of coronavirus, people haven't been able to travel as much. And hopefully with vaccines coming out, we will be able to resume traveling. So my final question to you is this. If or hopefully when you'll be able to spend a day in Switzerland, what sort of places would you go to, and what things would you do if you could spend even just a day in Switzerland?
There is this mountain slide. I think the location is called Grindelwald. I have seen many different people who have personally gone there, shared their experience, and have seen images, etc. It is I would recommend it to almost anyone who visits Switzerland, because it's an amazing attraction. The views, the mountain views, the forests and the valleys is impeccable. And Switzerland overall, I mean, it's a beautiful country. It's very different to a lot of other European countries, very kind of unique in its mountainous and hilly sense. So I would recommend going to Grindelwald, getting onto that mountain slide.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to go to Grindelwald very soon. For people who want to find out more about the Twitter account, where should they go?
So they should go to Vault Switzerland on Twitter, give us a follow, and we'll keep you up to date with all elections and referendums on a federal and a cantonal level.
Excellent. Thank you once again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Amazon Music. You can also follow us on Twitter, @DebatedPodcast, like us on Facebook, Debated Podcast, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, whether about appearing on an episode of the podcast, or commenting on an episode that you've listened to, you can do so at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.